From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Washington NFL team, after decades of being pressured into changing its racist name this week, announced it would be dropping it. The team's spokespeople in a statement said they would be retiring the name and working on a new one. The announcement came after the shipping company FedEx, which is a major sponsor of the team, warned that it would, quote, terminate its business and public relationships unless the name was dropped. Meanwhile, as statues of Confederate leaders around the nation are being toppled and defaced in a new era of racial reckoning, historic figures linked to colonization and the oppression of indigenous people are also being marked for destruction. In California, Mission-era monuments, including churches and statues of Father Junipero Serra, are being targeted. We turn now to Alexi Sigona, who is an Amamatsun tribal member and PhD student at the University of California in Berkeley. Welcome to the program, Alexi.
Thank you, Sonali. Great to be here.
Let's first begin with the broader national situation, and in particular, the Washington team. I won't say the name of the team because it is pretty offensive, but I'm sure people know what it is. Dan Snyder, the team's owner, for years has resisted changing the name. Why do you think he changed it? Is it simply an issue of money?
Well, you know, I think the Black Lives Matter movement was really instrumental in this movement. You know, I mean, for decades, American Indian groups have been protesting this and people haven't been listening. And it's so interesting, you know, hearing the interviews of Dan Snyder years before, you know, he really changed his opinion. And I do think it is because of this pressure by these organizations, these corporations. And, you know, it's a good thing that happened, but it's always interesting to see why these things happen and the certain pressures that make things change, you know.
So you think that we're, as a country, focusing on issues of racism? It seems to me that the issue that began with racist police violence is rightfully being broadened to include a look at racism against African Americans as a whole, and then racism as it refers to the origins of the country as a whole, which necessarily includes the colonization of the U.S., settler colonialism, and the oppression of indigenous people.
Exactly. You know, now is a great time to really be unearthing these things and really be looking at why we're here on this ground, and maybe that America in its foundation was illegal, that there is genocides. You know, it's really unsettling to think about, and I think conveniently America has put it to the side and not really thought about it as much as they should. But now it's coming to the forefront, and people really have to grapple with these tough and difficult questions and ponderings. And yeah, indigenous issues and settler colonialism is really being examined right now. And I'm very pleased to see the conversations that are taking place. It's really interesting here in California, and then also just nationwide.
White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany was asked about the name change of the Washington team. I want to play a clip of what she said and how she responded.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I haven't talked to him since the specific announcement's been made. I have talked to him, but not specifically on that. But last week, his tweet made it clear that these teams name their teams out of strength, not weakness. And he talked about the Washington Redskins and Cleveland Indians looking at changing their names. And he says that he believes that the Native American community would be very angry at this. And he does have polling to back him up. There was a Washington Post poll from a few years ago that 90% of Native Americans say they're not offended by the name. It is reflective of a 2004 poll. And the Washington Post notes that many of these Native Americans voiced admiration for the team name, like Barbara Bruce, who said, "I'm proud of being Native American and of the Redskins. I'm not ashamed of that at all. I like that name." Gabrielle Nez, another 29-year-old from the Navajo community, "I really don't mind it. I like it."
And that is the voice of White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. How do you respond, Alexi, to what she just said?
Well, you know, I think it's really interesting, and it kind of brings up this this trope of the noble savage, definitely. The kind of like honoring the noble savages, the fearless leaders before, and that whole depiction and stereotype, which has been really diminishing and demeaning to American Indian communities.
Do you
mascots,
think?
Personally, mm-hmm. with my, oh.
No, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Well, personally, I never saw myself as Native American when I was younger because of these mascots and these tropes of what Native Americans were. And I didn't see myself as this fearless Indian leader. And so growing up, I didn't have that identity. And I think it's kind of demeaning to a lot of different people who don't see themselves in that way. And so then they feel like they're not able to claim this identity. Additionally, you know, pointing out one person, and there's 570, 580 nations in the United States, just one person saying they don't have a problem with it is, I think, an inaccurate representation of the general consensus today. And, you know, community members in my community also have Cleveland Indian hats sometimes too, you know. And I think it's time that we question in our own communities ourselves these mascots as well. But for sure, the Washington team is the most atrocious and egregious one of them all.
So the question of history and historical awareness is a really big one. And one of the things that we're finding that's happening now around the country is as we examine the statues and the historic monuments that people are targeting, that history, I think, is being re-examined. Let's turn to what's been happening in California. California has a long history of the Catholic Church and the mission era in particular as it relates to Native American tribes here in the state of California. I know that in Southern California, in Olvera Street, there has been a statue of Junipero Serra that was recently pulled down by activists, and it was videotaped. It was a very, very interesting moment. Who was Junipero Serra? Can you give our audience that history of a man that only a few years ago was being slated for canonization for sainthood by Pope Francis?
Yeah, that makes me laugh, you know, that he people see him as a saint. But yes, Serra was a man who, under the guise of trying to bring Catholicism to Alta California, which was under Spain's rule at the time, here, present-day California, Serra is a man who brought atrocity. He himself was a violent person. He would suggest that Native Americans would be whipped in the missions. He also would, have these terrible living conditions where a lot of people were crammed together. And also a lot of people were raped in these missions too. And so Serra was egregious in the way that a whole way of being, so many different languages in California Native communities were entirely disrupted. And a lack of knowledge of traditional knowledge systems was held at the mission system. So Serra, you know, for California Indians, stands for a lot of atrocious things in the beginning of a very terrible time.
How widespread is his legacy in California? I mean, the statue on Olvera Street is not the only statue of Serra in the state. I understand that there's many statues up and down the state.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. So there's many private philanthropists who will pay to have these statues erected at Catholic schools. With a lot of wealth comes that power to be able to impose people's idea of what the historical representation of California was. Having a big towering statue 10 feet high over you when you're a middle schooler, you know, it's hard to critically think about the past when something like that is erected right next to you and revered. And so for me, I went to a Catholic high school and we played Serra High School all the time in San Mateo, California. And so I just knew that name. It was almost a household name to me, Serra. And his name was never questioned in my schools or anything else. It was always accepted that he was a saintly person.
And then in Southern California, again, there was just a few days ago news of the San Gabriel Mission having its roof burned down, massive, massive damage to an institution that is, you know, revered in the community. But of course, also still has its roots in that oppressive past. And it's been really interesting to see the response here in Southern California. A lot of people, you know, upset about what happened to the church. It's not yet clear if the church was a target of vandals. It's possible that it might have been. Other mission, era monuments and those communities around them are a little bit on edge. What do you think is behind this sort of vandalism? Would you say that, you know, there are many right-wing media outlets that use this to discredit, say, the Black Lives Matter movement, but do you think that we should be seeing this sort of vandalism as the cry of a of communities that have had enough?
Well, look, I mean, the mission system was responsible for nearly 100,000 deaths of California Indians. There's a lot of pain and trauma that's happened over generations. And that pain and trauma has also made a lot of California Indians really Catholic, really religious. I know my family was really Catholic. And so there's a lot of things that we need to think about and unpack. And when you look at the context of what the missions did, one building, is a lot different than 100,000 deaths. At the same time, these historical landmarks, they can be used to really have a better education system, to teach a true representation of the past. You know, these statues that are being taken down, they belong in a place in a museum where people can teach children about the wrong way that people represented history. And so I think that these materials that have so much trauma embedded in them still need to be retained so that the future generations can learn from our mistakes today.
And of course, public school kids in California have most likely been subjected to the California Missions School Project, right? Where kids build little cardboard replicas of these missions. Do you feel that our educational system here, the state educational system, has been part of the problem of not looking at this history with a critical eye?
Exactly. And I think there are moves that are addressing this right now. We're working with some UC Santa Cruz scholars right now, looking at how to have a more accurate portrayal of this history. But yes, in fourth grade, it still happens way too often, where people kind of create this model or idealized version of the past that just is not true. On one hand, creating this history and recreating this history is not allowing young people to question why they're here, that there was a genocide and that this is still stolen land and there are so many unrecognized tribes that are affected by the mission system. And then also, they're also able to, you know, play Indian in a way and pretend to be in there in the missions having fun and stuff. And so that can be harmful in a number of ways. And even in our community, you know, tribal members having to do this mission project is really unsettling for us.
What are some of the conversations that you know of that are taking place within tribes in California today as we see statues being pulled down, as we see this, and not just in California, statues of Columbus and other parts of the country are also being targeted? What are the conversations that are happening, that you think are happening within tribes here?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. Well, as you know, there are many different nations. These are sovereign nations that have all of their own politics within, you know, 600 plus sovereign nations in the United States. And I could speak to what the Amamutsun tribal band has been talking about, you know, and we've really been talking about this representation and how to approach addressing the harmful historical narratives. You know, we have tribal elders and other tribal citizens who are talking about not being violent and making sure to be safe and making sure to do this in a good way. And then we have, you know, the younger generation who are really tired of things and want change a bit more quickly. And I'm not saying the younger generation wants violence or anything like that, but to tear down a statue and to pull down a statue is a lot more quick and effective than maybe engaging in conversations with the Catholic Church, for example, or other ways of doing like a more political slow process. So I think there is a tension between different generations. And of course, many tribal citizens have their own ideas about this history. And it's causing a lot of conversations, at least in my community. And I imagine that other communities as well across the nation have been having these really important conversations.
The Los Angeles Times, in writing about this historical reckoning, brought up a really important fact. California's indigenous population exceeded 200,000 in the year 1800, but plummeted to about 15,000 100 years later. That's a shocking reduction. It doesn't go into all of the details why that number dropped so fast, but quoted Governor Gavin Newsom, who said last year at a ceremony, "It's called genocide. No other way to describe it." Now, you mentioned putting some of these statues, some of these monuments into museums where that history can be properly discussed. But what about, you know, alternative statues? Or is that not even really, you know, an approach that we need to be looking at? Because some have said, all right, if you don't want these statues, let's come up with statues of Black and brown figures that we revere. But is that something that is even considered consistent with indigenous cultures and histories?
That's a really great question. Thank you. Well, I was referring to the UC Santa Cruz mission. Okay, so at UC Santa Cruz in the summer of 2019, my tribe and then also UC Santa Cruz officials brought down a mission bell there. And this was something that hadn't really been done before, but taking down this mission bell was done a ceremony for our tribe, and it was also a path to healing for us, to having the right narrative about the history of the Santa Cruz region. And so today, there is no mission bell there. It has been removed. But there isn't anything else that is talking about the true history. And so one of the conversations that we've been having with UC Santa Cruz is about trying to have a plaque there that honors the thousands of deaths that took place in the Santa Cruz region and Mission Santa Cruz that affected our community, the California Indian community in that region, the Awaswa-speaking and Mutsun-speaking peoples. And so I do worry that if we have a new statue up, it might be torn down by other people. And, you know, I think that that would be a terrible thing to see, is one of a California Indian leader, a Native American leader, being toppled down in retaliation. But I do think that something like a plaque talking about this in that space is needed. Otherwise, the absence of anything in that space where a racist statue once was is not really doing justice in teaching the future generations about the history of the United States.
As a young person, would you like to see greater solidarity between communities of color in the United States going forward? You know, the Black Lives Matter movement has now become a multiracial movement with, of course, a lot of African-American leadership at the helm. But there are many intersecting spaces where Latinos, Asians, African-Americans, and indigenous communities share similar grievances. And certainly, you know, many are stronger than one.
Certainly. And, you know, our creation story tells us that we have to take care of the lands and all the living things on our traditional territory. And many people living in Amamutsun homelands are there by no fault of their own and are there to stay. And they have past traumas that have brought them there as well. And so in order to heal Amamutsun territories, you know, we feel it's really important to heal all the things and the people there, all the living things. And so that is definitely something that we've been talking about. I've participated in No Ice movements, and also have been closely following and been in conversation with community members about how to be involved in the Black Lives Matter movement. I've been fortunate enough to have been involved in Amamutsun Youth weekly meetings where we discuss certain topics that are happening in today's events. And one of these meetings a few weeks ago was about how to stand in solidarity of Black Lives Matter. And it was the best meeting we've had in the 3 months that we've had these meetings. And, you know, it was 2 hours. It was people talking about how we need to be involved, how we do think that it's super important for Indigenous peoples to be in alliance with these other groups who are here in the United States and have past traumas of their own as well.
And do you think there's a generational divide within? I mean, certainly I understand you could only really speak to your experience, but do you see a generational divide within your community?
Well, I've seen the most energy come from tribal youth, and high school and middle school aged youth are really active. We have conversations personally, one on one, about how they can get more involved in these things, and just really like I need to help. This feels so important to me. I'm in their heart, and so I guess from my perspective, I have seen the energy of this younger generation, and it's been super inspiring. And I do think that elders are listening and are very proud of a lot of the things that tribal youth are doing. And I'm not quite sure, but of course everyone's really busy, and there are some of us have had to go through educational systems and experiences that have shaped the way we think about things. For example, tribal elders who grew up with this whole mission system imposed on them and not even able to question how bad the mission system was for decades, only being 40 and being able to question this is a lot harder than people like me who were able to question the validity of Sarah being a saint from a lot earlier age.
Right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Alexei, for joining us today. And good luck to you. Thanks for sharing your insight with us.
Thanks, Sonali. It's great to be here.
My guest has been Alexei Sigona. He is an Amamutsun tribal member and a PhD student at UC Berkeley. We've been discussing how today's era of racial reckoning is confronting colonial oppression of Indigenous people. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.